Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here with Stone Payton, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio, and this is a very special one because this is the BMA Atlanta Special Edition. Stone, how are you doing today?
I am doing well, man. I look forward to this segment every month or 6 weeks or so. We always have a crop of passionate, really smart folks that are doing a lot of great work, and Mark Simmelmeyer is the reason we get a chance to visit with these folks. Welcome back to the studio, man.
Thank you very much. Once again, appreciate the fact that you've offered us this opportunity to talk to the audience about where we are with BMA Atlanta right now.
So are we going to Maggiano's anytime soon?
Yeah.
Yeah?
In fact, we are.
All right, tell us about it.
Third of our lunches this year will be next Tuesday, 11 o'clock, Maggiano's Perimeter. And Dan and Deborah, who are here with us today, will be speaking, and I'm not going to give away their topic. I'm going to let them talk about it. So, Dan and Deborah, would you introduce yourselves and kind of tell us what you're going to talk to folks about next Tuesday?
Sure. Deborah, if you want to start.
Sure. I'm Deborah Williams. I'm Director of Marketing at McKesson, and Dan Hansen got me into this. So, Dan, you can go ahead and explain the rest.
So, we have a kind of a trade going back and forth, and this is the one she owes me, and now I owe her another one. I'm Dan Hansen. I'm a senior partner with Red House here in Atlanta.
And you guys work together, and you've done some project work together. Is my understanding
that
properly?
We've actually worked together for a long time, 7-8 years.
Yes, wow. That's true, Dan. That's true.
It's been a while. Yeah.
It's been good. It's been good.
And you're going to share some of that experience at this lunch. You're going to do a presentation?
Absolutely. Yes, we're doing a presentation collectively on marketing in the C-suite.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I'll tell you what. Let's get a little bit of background on both organizations. First, sure. If we could, we'll start with you, Deborah.
Sure.
Business Performance Services?
Yes.
All right. So speak to that a little bit, if you would.
So McKesson Business Performance Services is B2B, business to business, and its services is what we really are offering to our customers. And one of our core customers is, of course, the C-suite with hospitals and health systems. So it's a complex sale. That's something to remember. And also it's more of a consultative sale. So that's been our approach into the C-suite, and I know that we're going to talk further about it. But McKesson Business Performance Services has over 35 years of experience providing revenue cycle management services. So let me just take a minute to describe what that is.
Sure.
So if you go into a hospital, or let's say your doctor's office, everything behind that desk that you see, somebody from registration when they take you in, mm-hmm. To the claim that you get, as well as on the payer side where we negotiate the contracts with the payers. We
what about the lollipops? Are you guys in charge of lollipops?
One of our divisions does, I'm sure. And I'll get you one if you want one. So that's really what we do. So we provide that back
end. So everything behind the desk.
You got it. Right.
But if you want to do something new with a physician's practice or a hospital or a clinic or a long-term care facility or whatever it is, I got to believe just getting in to have a substantive conversation with whoever can make that call, that's got to be a real bear, yeah? I mean,
that's a great point. The doctors are very busy.
Right.
Now, when you're talking about a doctor, it's a little bit different mindset than a C-suite. So that's really what we were trying to help our sales team adjust to with this whole campaign, because one of the critical pieces for us was that our sales team had done a reorg. So they were used to calling on doctors and physician offices.
So they had systems that were targeting to that?
Yes. And so now they were calling into the C-suite.
Using the same techniques that they were trying with the doctors?
Yes, and it wasn't working. It wasn't working because the doctor is really about how to try to grow his practice.
Right.
Whereas in the C-suite, they're under such pressure. I mean, it's really remarkable what they're able to accomplish because the reimbursement's going down, your cost is going up, they're trying to improve margins. So the talk track that you talk to a doctor with versus a C-suite is totally different.
Now, what about the government regulations? Aren't there some new rules of interacting with people in the medical profession, like from a sales standpoint? Like there were some things you could do previously that you may be not able to do nowadays?
Yeah, now we have to walk in and we sign up on a list and, you know, we get our turn. So it's not kind of the old days where...
Like bring sandwiches?
Bring sandwiches and donuts, right. You can't really... Well, you can, but you have to sign up for it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it's a little bit different.
And Dan, so you came to the rescue? What's your role?
Nobody rescues her.
Yeah.
She picks who's going to help her out, and that's hopefully me more times than it's not. So, she had gone down the road and determining what needed to be done, and as you were listening, she did a lot of her homework internally to understand what the problems were and what challenges she was going to face, and now marketing to C-level executives within a hospital versus going to the docs. So once she had decided what she needed to do and what the goal was she was going to try and accomplish, that's when she gives me a yell and says, hey, you're going to have to help me figure out how we're going to do this now. So that's usually where I fit in.
But they're every bit as hard to get to, if not more so, than the doctors were.
Yep.
Right. They have their own unique challenges, right?
Just even have that conversation. I mean, how do you even get on their radar?
Well, you know, it depends on what you're trying to get on the radar for and the value of what you're trying to get on the radar for. You know, are you just trying to influence them, or do they genuinely need to be the leaders in a decision-making process? So you've got to kind of understand those issues. And then from there, you can start figuring out what your tactical plan is going to be and what you're going to
do. Now, that's an interesting point, because there's some people in sales that think, oh, I got to get to the highest person possible. Mm-hmm. And maybe the C-suite isn't the right place to be for certain services or products.
Exactly right. Yeah, a few years back, we had a client that came to us and said, hey, we want to sell this software to CFOs because it helps them do X, Y, and Z for billing.
Right.
And we went to the HFMA show, and I drifted the floor, did about 50 interviews with CFOs, and found that, indeed, they were not the person that would actually make the decision on that. That was actually the head of the central billing office. You know, and to a man, they basically said, well, or to a woman, that essentially something like that, they'd push down, they'd look for a recommendation, and they'll check it off a box if that's the case. But by and large, they didn't engage in looking at those solutions. They left it to the other people. So you're right. It's very different today. They've got so many responsibilities, and they're higher than just simple problems. They've got to change the way they're doing business today.
Now, is that from an agency standpoint, so your first objective is to do research to really get the lay of the land to find out what is true and what is just what people think?
Yes, that's a big part of it. If the client hasn't got the research that we believe is empirical enough to support what we're trying to do, then we'll go ahead and offer to append that or add additional research to that.
Right, because advertising sometimes gets a bad rap in that they always want to blame it when their sales aren't there and sometimes if your strategy is off from the beginning, you could have the best ad in the world, but if it's hitting the person that doesn't make the decision, it looks like the ad is ineffective, but in reality, it was the strategy behind it that was ineffective.
That's true. Yeah. One of the things that Red House claims that we balance strategy and creative equally, because you're right. I mean, a great strategy and poor creative isn't going to get a result for you, but the converse is true as well. Poor strategy executed with excellent creative still ends up falling. Oddly, great creative will just help you fail faster.
We've talked to some people, like they have a great strategy, and all they're realizing is their sales process isn't that good.
Yeah.
They quickly found a deficiency in their own process.
Yeah. We got them coming in the door, and now we don't know what to do with them.
Right.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
In fact, at the next Tuesday lunch, they're going to present a bit of a case study. So I'd like ask them if we could just to talk a little bit about what
you want to preview
the case was, kind of what things were, just to kind of tee it up, preview.
Sure.
So I'll take this, Dan, if it's okay.
Absolutely.
So one of the things that you were talking about was the research. And I really believe that in marketing, you do have to set the strategy first, because if you automatically jump to the tactical, you're going to miss. And that's exactly what we talked about. So one of the things that we did not have a lot of transparency into was the persona of the CFO and what's going on there. And the reason why we targeted the CFO is we wanted to understand if they were the person, one, we needed to target.
Right.
Because if not,
that's good information.
That would be good. We don't want to waste our time. And then the other thing is, because of the consolidation in the healthcare industry, a hospital used to be, let's just say, didn't used to be, still is, but let's say 250 beds, and that's what the CFO is responsible for. And now with the conglomeration of hospitals and health systems, it's a much larger picture and a much larger landscape, so their responsibilities are a lot broader. So we had to understand what are some of their pain points and if they're really the person that we need to call upon. So we conducted a research study. We did identify, and this is where Red House came in with a lot of their expertise and really recommended that we did the study first because we didn't know what we were doing. So they said, let's go to the C-suite, let's figure this out, focus on the CFO, partner with somebody like the Healthcare Financial Management Association. This is not a plug for them, but they did do a great job. They have a research arm. They have over 40,000 members. Their core audience is CFOs. So that's what we targeted. And then we developed a survey to try and understand, as they're employing physicians, how does that impact them, or does it? Is it going to someone else? And we found out, absolutely, it is falling into their area. and it's expanding their scope of responsibilities. Now, if you already have a job that fills your bucket 100% and somebody says, by the way, you now have another two other buckets that you have to fill,
right.
They're not real happy about it.
Exactly.
But this is what they can do. So we uncovered some pain, but we also uncovered the fact that the only way we could get in the door with them is show me some value. Don't just try to sell me something. Show me some value. And so what we tried to do with this study was to identify certain strategies that their peers were using with employment of physicians that was working. And so we wanted to create this kind of awareness, and so we could get in the door with some executive briefings that from the results of this survey would allow us to do that, and we did.
Now, can you talk a little bit about this relationship with the association? Because that seems like an important component to this. Was that an important component?
It was. It's a form of branded content marketing, right? So everyone throws
around. Because I want to know, what is the value for them? Because you went to them and you said, hey, give me some information that's going to be super helpful for me. And then, you know, and I'll give you back the results of this super, don't they ask what's in it for them?
It's win-win. Everything is a win-win. We try to do that.
Right.
So one is our membership. So we provide dollars to their corporate membership. So that's one aspect. But two.
So McKesson says, oh, you know what? We would love to sponsor you guys at this level in exchange for you helping us do this research.
Well, and also the research was not free.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They made money off of our membership. They made money off of our research. Mm-hmm. And then also we promoted it. The PR off of this was phenomenal. So we got into, I think, 411 media outlets. We had over 4 million impressions.
Nice.
And it was a joint brand between HFMA and McKesson. So it's a win-win. They get the visibility and we get the credibility from them.
Right. And then, but that report then allowed you to elegantly go back to the people who had a certain pain, so then you can at some point try to sell them something.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, because they helped sponsor that report, they get the report. And prior to its release, we were able to utilize it in such a way that it was, before anyone else could even find out about it, we were offering it as a special option for these folks. So it became a core piece of the content marketing that we deployed for it.
Now, did you get any data that surprised you?
Oh, yes.
Yeah? Anything you can share with? Because I know that sometimes happens. You know, you go in with one set of assumptions, and it just blows your mind, something 180 degrees out from there.
Every time I do this type of research, which is always interesting. So think about a CFO, at least the stereotype that I have in my mind, is that they're always looking for an ROI. They're always looking for something.
They're under a lot of pressure. I mean, that's the thing that people have to understand when they're dealing with CFOs specifically. What's the lifespan of a CFO at a company now? It's just a few years.
It's like a football coach, right?
It's like an SEC coach has a longer tenure.
They're not allowed a lot of mistakes or missteps.
No, that's a great point. And so they're not usually risk takers. Because they want to put their kids through college and have a good financial future. So one of the things that I was thought was very surprising is when we asked, why are you employing physicians? Because back in the 90s, hospitals employed physicians and then divested of many of them. But so the answer came back, we're really not looking for an ROI. No. I was like, did we ask the right question? I don't understand.
Right.
What they were looking at is more a protection strategy. It was more of a defensive strategy.
So it's like a land grab of physicians?
Yes, exactly. So they weren't looking for an ROI. At least then they would say, yeah, not today. Maybe, and even not in the first 2 or 3 years. They still wanted it, but that wasn't their primary reason, which was surprising to me.
Was that because of they don't know how the healthcare is going to go in the next few years? So they just figured, let me do a land grab now and let me get as many physicians as possible?
I think that's partly it. I also think with accountable care, they know that there is, to your point, there's only a certain number of primary care physicians and specialties, and so they want to have that with their hospital affiliation versus someone else's.
Mm-hmm. Now, Dan, healthcare, your sole focus, or is that a practice area and Red House has other practice areas?
We do have other practice areas, but it is a key focus for us, and it's been that way probably for the last 9 years. Yeah, so we do a lot of the larger brands in the healthcare space.
And then even without the benefit of a 7-year positive track record, can you walk us through kind of the initial steps of an engagement with Red House, how things start out?
Sure.
Yeah.
Normally what we look for is we look for the problem that they're trying to solve. So some clients will come to you and say, hey, I've got a generate X amount of millions of dollars in revenue by end of year, and X percent of it nowadays has to be attributed directly to marketing, right? So marketing's become, as we all know, a little more accountable in the last 5 years because things have just started to tighten up. And as a result, when they look at marketing, they're saying, well, you guys are doing all these great ads and this fun stuff, but show me where that's actually making the money. So in most cases, they've been assigned some sort of revenue goal that they have to achieve, or they've got a route or a specific goal, as Deborah had in her situation, of meetings they want to attain or whatever the case is. And then from there, we'll actually sit down and run the numbers to figure out what it's going to take to achieve that. So we'll look at their close ratios. We'll look at how many meetings they would typically get and what the average amount of people in the market might be buying at any given point in time. We'll run a formula together and we'll figure out how we're going to need to get there. And then from there, what are the tactics that are going to help us get to those numbers? And then we have done enough of this for so long and we've tracked everything we've ever done since 01 that we have a general sense of what needs to be assembled in order to get to those basic numbers, and then the rest should be predictable all the way through to the end.
Yeah, you're harvesting intelligence from every engagement that you do.
Yes.
That
mm-hmm.
all of your clients, I mean, I'm sure you wouldn't compromise anything proprietary, but
right.
all of your clients can benefit because
yes.
you're harvesting from every engagement.
We are, yeah. And then there's some base data that we keep in-house as well, like a national list of holidays, of hospitals and the bed counts that they all contain, things like that, so that we can actually go in and research some of the data a little bit further and determine if there are behavioral patterns amongst different types of organizations based on size. So then we can use that information to help inform the next program that we're running with that particular client or another client.
Now, what other industries do you work in outside of healthcare?
We do a lot in the services space. So companies like LexisNexis, Equifax, IHS in Colorado, AT&T on the mobility side, but strictly business-to-business focus.
Now, are the strategies similar in healthcare as they would be in professional services or technology?
You know, you could say they would. They were. They've changed a lot more in the last few years, to Deborah's point earlier, because of the accountable care. The healthcare industry is
so
going
they have
through,
unique challenges because of that?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, well, I mean, you're talking about a hospital, which, or even physician offices, which were paid on how many patients they could roll through as quickly as possible, and suddenly that's mm-hmm. going away, and now it's all based on value. So now I've got to figure out how I'm going to make money when I'm just being paid stipend based on each patient that I see and my percentage of the population that I have to manage. So, and then on the hospital side, now they start seeing penalties for readmissions and things like that.
Right, that's because now they get dinged if a person comes back for the same problem, right?
Within a window of time, yes.
Within a certain
mm-hmm.
period of time.
Absolutely.
So that's a totally different world now.
Yeah, the
right.
CMS, you know, Center for Medicaid and Medicare Services has definitely changed the rules of that game. I came out of the healthcare end of things with Kimberly Clark, and those never events mm-hmm. have really,
that changes
started,
the math, right?
It has. Hey, you know, the one thing I would like is for, you know, you were talking, just so we can stay on the case kind of a little bit, you know, so you needed to reach the CFOs, you needed to talk to them about the systems and things and what value that brought to them, rather than just necessarily an ROI. How did you come up with the tactics? What were the tactics and strategy, Dan?
Well, as I mentioned, we have sort of a proprietary formula basis that we go through to kind of establish what we're going to need to have to accomplish to do that. So how many will we have to get in terms of responses to get the amount that she needs in physical meetings that are done? Okay, and then what's the best way to do that? We know open rates. We know CTRs. We know what certain types of mail will do. We know what outbound would follow up with. So you can compile the right components and put together that tactical architecture, and then you've got to map it and you've got to follow it because we will adjust those programs on the fly as they go as well. So we're completely in tune with each aspect of it. We report regularly with the client on how each one's performing. If something's not performing the way we think it should be, we look at it pretty harshly and determine what we need to do with it. Is there a modification that's required, or do we drop that tactic in lieu of something else, or do we bump up another tactic that's surprisingly doing better than we thought it would? So from that perspective, that's essentially how we arrive at that plan, and then we'll go through it with the client, help them understand where we expect to get that and how we expect to get to the goal.
Now, the goal being meetings, what was the metric you were using as this kind of big goal? Was it, I need as many meetings with
right.
these executives as possible?
Well, the great thing about working with Red House is they do bring the creative, but they bring the strategy, and then also Dan always reminds me, but at the end of the day, how are you going to measure this? And that's really good, because marketing is becoming more and more accountable. You have to do that in today's environment. So the goal that we set was 20 to 40 executive briefings. Now, that may not sound a lot, But in trying to get to the C-suite, we felt that would be good, particularly with the number of salespeople we had and the number of regents that we had. So we accomplished 34 executive briefings.
Wow.
And I have my notes here so I can tell you. And that created six opportunities. Now, six opportunities, remember, our deal sizes are pretty right. large. So it's not, you know, $100 deals. And then out of that, we generated several million in sales.
Nice.
So that was really nice, and that's why we like Red Hat.
Now, an organization like McKesson, do you find yourself having to build the business case to go outside, period, for that kind of expertise? And then do you also have to build a business case for Red House versus Blue House versus Green? I mean, what kind of hoops do you have to jump through before you can write this guy a check to come help you out?
Sure. Well, there's only one Red House, but Dan has really jumped through a lot of hoops. You know, at McKesson, because it is such a large company, there is a process, right, Dan? That you have to go through as part of our RFP process and become an approved vendor.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
and
wow.
Once you're on that list, then there's several others that we could go to.
Yep.
But you have to get approved. So it's really quite a process that you have to go through. And honestly, some companies or agencies that I've talked to, they're not willing to do it. They may not have the bandwidth or feel that they're going to get the return. You have to kind of weigh.
So you had to do executive briefings? Did you use the same tactics you used on the
cooking?
C-suite?
Well, it's a trend, and for anybody who's in business marketing, they've probably started to see this. It's a trend in a lot of the major corporations to turn over agency selection to the purchasing department.
Purchasing? Really?
Yeah.
So the same guy that's purchasing, like, their computer?
Paper. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is it picking their ad agency?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You've got to be kidding me.
No, I'm not kidding you. I've been through several of them now, and it is an interesting experience.
So how can they possibly compare agency to agency in the same way they compare paper vendor to paper vendor?
You know, they treat the process the same way, which is unfortunate. So we've had at-length discussions with them around general price points on certain key services, not just with McKesson's. I'm talking whenever we've gone through this, and we've done this with a couple of our clients now, and helping them understand that you can't just on a flat price this because you're going to have variances in the quality. And don't get me wrong, if you're going to set a copywriting price point at $75 an hour, you're going to get
so they're doing
exactly
it like the medical. So right, they're doing it by the service
to some extent. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
And do you have a readmission penalty?
Yeah,
I believe it. There's penalties. There are penalties.
Now, I will say up front, marketing makes the recommendations of which. Yep.
Okay, so you're giving them kind of pick between these 10,
yeah.
Right?
And
right.
then make them jump through these hoops,
pretty much,
because you already know that you'd be happy with any of the 10.
And the benefit for the agency, hopefully, is that we have many different business departments and business units with different marketing people, so they're going to go to that list first because it's a lot easier. Easier, yeah. And that's the value for Dan.
That's true. Yeah, we work with several.
This is a good future talk for you of how to navigate this RFP world for an agency.
There's a wealth of information here, Mark.
That's
it's funny because again, you know, at Kimberly Clark, after 32 years of that, the last 2 or 3 years we were doing agency selection much the same way, and I kept thinking to myself. You know, there's two sides to John Wanamaker's comment. You know, half of the money I spend in advertising is wasted. The problem is I don't know which half.
Right.
The marketing people say, this is what I want. And then the purchasing side of it, we call it, what do we call it? Acquisition or something. Something acquisition. Mm-hmm. You know, looks at it and they're figuring out which half isn't working. You know, and that's what their basis is. I really wish the process didn't work that way. I understand in financially... driven companies, you know, which is most of them today, especially publicly traded ones, you know, where that seems to make sense, again, in the C-suite, you know, that's a cost-saving measure, but it doesn't make a lot of sense to me. It never did, and even when I was on the client side like you were and going through that and knowing there were people I wanted to work with, trying to get purchasing to agree with it was sometimes difficult.
Yeah.
Well, I think in creative services, part of creativity is going crazy and being totally wrong. You know, so you can learn and say, let me just steal this one part, and maybe that's the part that's the breakthrough idea that's going to work. And then when you're just kind of commoditizing it, it's hard to...
Yeah, no, you've hit on it. You can commoditize 80% of marketing, right? Because the guy that operates the software for automation or the production person who does your basic work and, you know, programming or building something, those are commoditized roles because there is a best practice and sort of a formula for that. But when you talk about the creative product, you talk about the strategy product, those are the two that you can lose the product in the process.
Right, because it could take you a minute to come up with the brilliant idea, or it could take you a month.
Yeah, well, that and the quality of the people that can recognize the good ones, right? Yeah.
So that's
and that's the big challenge they're going to be faced with. So
Deborah, I got to ask, if you identify some really highly specialized product, service, expertise, and you don't have the time or the inclination, or perhaps that resource doesn't have the time or inclination to go through that whole process, is there any path to like bring them through a Red House, like an established? Is that legit? Is that has that ever been done? Is that open for conversation? Sometimes if you find that guy or that piece of software or that app or I don't know what.
No, we're allowed to bring in third parties to assist in programs that are developed for our clients.
And then you're ordained. We trust you, and then
They become one of our vendors, right? So they end up being vended through us. Yeah. So for one client, they had a speaker in mind that was a doctor they wanted to use, and because he wasn't a corporation, they weren't allowed to contract with him. Uh-huh. So we contracted with him as a third party vendor, just like we would a printer or something of that nature, and just put him in as part of the proposed work that we were doing. So,
now how does it work from when you're approved in these situations, and you come up with or you stumble upon an idea that you think is, hey, this is really good, and you guys might be interested? Are they allowed to go to you and say, hey, I got this idea, or do you have to wait for her to have a need that you pitch? Like, how collaborative
is it? Deanna's pitching me all the time. Are you kidding me?
Once you're in there, now you have access. That's part of the benefit of being one of the approved vendors?
It's always open access. I mean, if Deborah needs anything, she just picks up the phone and calls me.
Right, but if you find something like, hey, I found this cool way that in this other industry they're doing this, you might want to consider this. So you're pitching her.
Yeah, she's right. I throw her stuff a lot, sometimes when she doesn't want to hear it. But, we'll be looking at something. I'll be like, this is something, and it's a risk, and it might be something we could trial and that sort of thing. A lot of times she wants to jump on and give it a shot if it seems legit. So.
Well, and you just know they have the type of relationship, and he and Red House are the type of strategic resource. You're probably also sharing ideas with her that really don't have anything to do with you. You just know they're going to benefit her.
Right.
I mean, you have that kind of relationship.
Yeah, absolutely.
Before we wrap, I got to know your backstory. How did you arrive at being the grand poobah of marketing?
Yeah. I don't know about that. I don't think you ever arrive. I've been in healthcare marketing for about 20 years, and I've always loved the healthcare side. I've been on the hospital side, done a little bit with the payers, product marketing, and I think healthcare is just fascinating. I love it.
It's going to stay fascinating. I mean, it's not going to get any duller, I don't think. Do you, Dan?
It's not. No, it's just starting to get interesting. So,
and you've always been in the marketing arena?
Always been in marketing. Yep, it's 30 years for me, and I still get up every day, and I love coming in. I mean, and what's interesting too is as a business to business marketer, is I feel like I'm one of the rare people that can keep up with all the changes, because if you think healthcare is crazy right now, marketing is even more insane.
Oh yeah,
it's absolutely insane how fast marketing and the fragmentation of the market is changing things, and the applications and the technology that's now being applied in marketing. And each year, I think it was, I don't know if I was talking to Deborah about it, but we do a lot of automation. We'll actually license for clients that don't want to get engaged in that. In Deborah's case, she has a license for Marketo, and we actually work on the platform for her directly. But we've got other clients on Eloqua, other clients on Pardot. And, years where we're just saying Marketo is far and above everybody else, and then we see the new release of what Eloqua just did, and we're like, my God, is it really changing in 1 year? And Marketo is going to fire back with something. So, year over year, the technology changes and advances at such a pace that, it's almost a full-time job to have somebody keeping up with just that.
Yeah. I'll bet.
Yeah.
And that's interesting, because the last luncheon was on marketing automation, specifically and how to find the right one.
Yeah.
And depending on the size of your business. Yeah, this year. And that is pretty much what
it's not even this year,
said.
It's this quarter.
It's this, it is. It's getting close to that. And guys are building stuff in the garage that are connecting technologies that you want. And we're looking at a new app that takes cube data and actually spits out all kinds of different views for you, because analysis is another area that we put a lot of time into, and so much of that is manual today. But there are apps that are starting to come out that are very fast doing analytics and things like that. And far less than the stuff that you'd have to pay $25,000, $30,000 a year just to license. So, it's changing. It's changing quick.
Now, I thought something you said that was interesting. You mentioned the 4 million, I guess, impressions from the PR side of this, but you were really wagging your tail about the 6, right? And that's a big shift in thinking from an advertising standpoint. At one point, it was like, tell the world, But those six are the things, that's really where the money is, right?
It's absolutely, and that's what we get
those
measured on.
Those 4 million are nice to haves, but the six are must haves.
Right, right.
And that's segmentation, yep.
Right, and then from a marketing standpoint, when you're marketing to six, that's a different strategy than getting 4 million.
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Because like a viral video or one of these things that gets shared 50 million times, that's really not important to the CFOs of the businesses, right?
It's less important. It's less important.
Right?
Yeah.
When you're like, would they care? Six people saw it, heard of it. We got six impressions. They all bought. Wouldn't everybody be high-fiving?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Right?
And then you also leverage that because we talked about CFOs are not risk takers usually, and I don't mean to stereotype, but a lot of them aren't. So they want to see that it's proven. So if those six opportunities, you have to leverage those, and you have to make sure from a customer perspective that you drive that value because you want them to be referenceable, because if they're not, that'll kill you in the marketplace in such a small little network. Mm-hmm. So that's what we have to do.
So not only do they have to be the right people that are interested, they also have to be successful in using the product
absolutely.
So that you can take that and then reach another six.
Right.
And that's these are big wins.
They're very big wins. Yeah. And we do annual surveys of all of our customers. We use something called NPS scores, Net Promoter Scores. We rank very high on those, but we drive it. I mean, we measure our operations people just like we measure our marketing people. Mm-hmm. So they're the ones that are keeping our customers happy. I really appreciate that. I bring them donuts. It's really it's really important.
Donuts do still work in that
area. Yes, they do.
Because the CFO will say, I love what you're saying, but show me where else because I want to keep my job for a while.
Right.
Yeah.
So now, once again, can you give the coordinates of the talk?
Sure. It's going to be next Tuesday, the 12th, at Maggiano's Perimeter. Starts at 11 o'clock for a little bit of networking, and these folks will be speaking, you know, somewhere just about noon by the time they set the dishes down just so we can clatter and make noise and distract the speakers.
That's right.
You know, I don't know why that always works out that way, but it does. And it's... the third, we'll do one more luncheon in October. We've also got two more young professional sessions coming up. One of them, let's see, July, August, September, and then one of those in November, probably a social thing. We had one 2 weeks ago, a panel discussion on today's top marketing disciplines defined with some content marketing people speaking to a group of about 35, you know, people under the age of 30. We're trying to focus very heavily on the young professional because I think I've talked about it before. The one thing we found and the one thing I keep listening to when I deal with BMA National and the other chapters around the country is that everybody's appalled is maybe the wrong word, but everybody's a little surprised by the fact that business-to-business marketing isn't being taught well when you learn marketing in school, and because of what's happened in business over the last 10 years, it's been real tough for these people to get young people to get a good training ground. So that's been a focus. So that's what I say. You know, Dan and Deborah will be speaking next Tuesday, Maggiano's Perimeter, 11 o'clock. We'd love to have you there. I think the topic's great, and I'm sure you'll learn a bunch.
And the website?
Wish we had one. That's a that's a bone of contention.
I know an agency that can help you.
Yeah.
Well, We're waiting for National to help so that all the chapters around the country can get on the same platform. Something is happening at National, which will become, I think, better announced at the end of this month in terms of a merger with another organization. And that's changing our platform, and that means National said, we're not sure we can give you a website right away, because the one we had, as the lights went out on the Atlanta chapter in 2012, nobody has any clue how to get into. We can't change it, we can't find it, we can't get the registrar to change anything. It's so there's no real good way to talk to BMA Atlanta except for we have a LinkedIn page, it's very active, which is very good. And of course we have a Facebook page.
All right, and so Facebook the best way?
Probably LinkedIn is the best way to find out what's going on. And anybody out there is welcome to contact me personally. I know my stuff will be all over what the you guys publish about this. And as the president of the local chapter, I'm the guy to answer questions. So just go ahead and get a hold of me.
And if you go to the LinkedIn and just search for BMA Atlanta, they'll be able to find it.
You'll be able to find it. Yep.
All right, Dan. How about you guys? Red House website.
Yeah, redhouseusa.com. If you're specific about healthcare, it's redhousehealthcare.com.
All right. And Deborah, you want to plug McKesson? Not that you guys need it.
McKesson.com. You can go directly
Keep it
there.
Simple.
Keep it simple.
All right. Well, thank you all for being part of the show today. The BMA Atlanta Special Edition is an important part of our mission here at Atlanta Business Radio, and we look forward to seeing you all next time. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.